free country.
All right, you're on, Michael.
Okay, I will go on mute.
In the Sefer Zikaron from Chaim Shmulevitz, there were a few pages printed, which is from his notes of his oros that he gave during the Yom Kippur War. Thank Rabbi Tanchum Cohen for pointing this out to me. And a lot of what he talks about there is very resonant in the situation that we are in now, exactly 50 years later. So I thought, especially because there's a Parshas Vayera tie-in to begin with, that we would discuss, present some of what he talked about in those sichos that are briefly, parts of which are printed in that Sefer Zikaron. He notes, and there's a lengthier treatment of this without the punchline over here that appears in the Sichas Musar from Tavshin Lamed Gimel. He notes that Chazal, quoting the pasuk in Yeshaya, Ki mei Noach zosli, fault Noach for not properly davening for his generation, and therefore the Navi refers to the Mabul as Mei Noach, as if to say that Noach had some culpability for the result of the Mabul. So Chaim Shulevitz suggests that maybe that could be understood in light of the following. Rashi in Ar Sedra quotes from Medrash Rabbah, Avraham Avinu, when he davens for Sodom and its suburbs, goes down from 50 to 40 to 30 to 20 to 10. And then Rashi comments, quoting from Chazal, Lo shama sarah, Apachos lo bikesh, Avraham Avinu didn't go below 10. Amar dor hamabul hayushmona, Noah chubanav v'nasheyam. He said precedent is that Noah had eight people that were upstanding individuals between him and his sons and daughters-in-law, and that wasn't enough to save the generation. Kfar Avraham Avinu anyway was asking, maybe there are 10, 10 meaning 9 plus Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that wasn't enough. So he knew that he couldn't go lower than Noach. If eight didn't work for Noach, then it's not going to work for him. And therefore, there's no point in davening further. So Esther Chaim Shulevitz, if it's the case that there's no point in davening for less than 10, and there were fewer than 10 people in the time of Noach, so what's the taina of Noach that he didn't daven? And if that's not the case, if there could have been a toelus even less than 10, then Avraham Avinu should have davened even for less than 10. So how is this the explanation? Avraham Avinu didn't daven for less than 10 because Noach didn't. But if Noach was faulted, then what's the raya for Avraham? And if Noach did the right thing, then why is Noach faulted? So he points to the famous Chazal, Sota Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, Amar Rab Simai, Shlosha Hayu Ba'osa Eitzah. In the time of Paro and the Sheva Mitzrayim, Paro had three advisors, Bilam, Iyo, v'Yisro. Bilam, Shaya, it's Narag. Bilam gave Paro the advice to be Meshabed Bnei Yisrael, and ultimately he was killed. Iyo, Sheshasak, Nidom, Yisro. And Iyo, who was silent, was punished with Yisro. And Yisro, Shabarach, Zachmim, Nebana, Sheyeshu, Lishkas, Agazes. And Yisro, who ran away, was rewarded. So, what was the reason that Yisro was chosen? Says Rechaim Shulevitz, because he assumed that there'd be no point in being mocha. Yisro was mocha, and he ran away, so obviously it didn't accomplish anything. So, what would Iyov have gained by being mocha? And yet, Iyov was punished with Yisurim. See, it's a bit of a Maamar HaMuzgar in that piece in the Sichas Musar Tav Shel Lamed Gimel. He explains that on some level, Yisurim is worse than Misa, even though the Gadol Misa is worse because life with Yisurim is better than no life at all. But be that as it may, he explains that the reason Iyov was punished by Yisurim is because when a person has Yisurim, he screams in pain from the Yisurim that are afflicting him, even if he knows that the screaming is not going to get him anywhere. Even if it's not going to save him, it's not going to help him. But the teva of a person is that if a person's in pain, if a person's experiencing Yisurim, he's going to scream out. So that was the onus for Eov, that Eov was silent, He didn't scream out to Paro, and he was punished in a situation in Yisurim, but all the screaming in the world wouldn't help him at all. But, so why was it that Eov was punished? Wasn't he correct that his screaming out, his talking up wouldn't have gotten anywhere, didn't help for Yisro, so why would it have helped with him? The answer is, doesn't make a difference. That if a person is experiencing tsar, so then even if there's no toeles, you scream out. So Eov should have had that empathy to the tsaros of Bnei Yisrael that would have caused him to scream out, even if there would be no toeles. He says that was the same taina on Noach, that Noach, it could be that in a chanami, it wouldn't have, the tefillah wouldn't have helped because Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have saved the world for less than 10, but it should have pained him to his core that the world is being destroyed. And that should have engendered a natural reaction of tzaaka, of davening, because the world is being destroyed. And how else would a empathetic person react? So even if the tefillah wouldn't have had any toelis, it still was the appropriate thing to daven to cry out. And that's what Noah was faulted for not doing. Avraham Avinu was already screaming out. He was screaming out 50, 40, 30, 20, 10. So it was clear that there's no lack of empathy at Avraham Avinu's point. So then Avraham Avinu's part, then it was simply a matter of pragmatics. At what point do you stop? And then less than 10, there's not going to be a toelus. So it made sense to stop. So that all of that appears in this volume. And in the piece L'Regel HaMatzav, in the Sefer Zikaron from 50 years ago, he says that in abridged form, and then he says that's definitely the tchusha that a person has to have in the environment in which he's speaking. Especially, we're talking about tefillas harabim, that even a situation where tefillas hayachid may not be answered, but tefillas harabim is much more likely to be answered. And that tefillah has to come from a point, a position where we're feeling the tzar of the rest of Klal Yisrael. I saw this week someone collected all the shmuzim from various Rosh Yeshiva and Eretz Yisrael over the last few weeks, the Psichas HaZman, and right after Simchas Torah. So Reb Baruch Dov Pivarsky, the Panovich Rosh Yeshiva, quoted in his Psichas HaZman remarks along these lines, the Medrash Rabbah in Vayikra, Parsha Daled Os Vav, Tani Chizkiyah. Se pizura. Pasuk in Yirmiyah. Yisrael nimshul. Se pizura Yisrael. Nimshul Yisrael lese. Klal Yisrael are compared to a sheep. Maaseh hazeh loka al rosho be'echad me'evarav v'chol evarav margishin. Just as a sheep, if you bang it on the head or any other limb, the entire sheep feels that blow. Yisrael, Chote, the Kulan Margishin. So the Medrash says that in the limited context, that sounds like an idea of Arvus, that if one member of Klal Yisrael sins, that has an effect on everyone else. Baruch Dov Pivarsky was saying it in our context, that Yisrael is Nimshel to Aseh, because the reaction of any member of Klal Yisrael, if other members of Klal Yisrael are in a state of Tzara, has to be that everyone feels that tzara, everyone feels that tzar, as opposed to other animals where you knock the animal on the head hurts, but the arm is fine. Aseh, whatever that means or whoever that works, ask a veterinarian. If you knock it on the head, then the leg and the arm are going to, or the front leg and the back leg are going to hurt as well. So that's Klal Yisrael, that we have that heightened empathy and realization. We should have that heightened empathy and feeling that if any other member of Klal Yisrael is Sarah, that should affect us as well. Chaim Shmulevitz then connects this to a different maracha that he has, also printed in the Tavshil Lama Gimel collection of Sichos Moser, Parshas Hazinu. The pasuk says in Parshas Hazinu, Hatzur Tamim Paolo, Ki Chal Derechav Mishpat, Kel Amunah Ve'ein Avel. So Kadosh Baruch Hu's ways are all pure, are all straight. Kelim and other, in other, there's no crookedness in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways. So he quotes from Chaim Blazer, what are we praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mishpat is ein avel, it's not crooked. So we would hope that even human mishpat is not going to be crooked. We strive that human mishpat should also be straight. So what are we praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mishpat is ein avel. So Chaim Shulavitz explains that the difference between Mishpat B'nei Adam and Mishpat HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that when it comes to Mishpat B'nei Adam, you can punish a person for what he did wrong. But if you punish one person, there's going to be collateral damage that affects the sphere around him. It affects his wife, it affects his kids, it affects family members, it affects friends. So you put someone in jail for his crimes. Very nice that he deserved that punishment, but what did his wife do to deserve it? What did his kids do? What did his friends, his colleagues, his business associates, etc.? When it comes to Mishpat HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everybody gets whatever they deserve exactly the osa mida. So even if there's a primary person that's affected or punished, but everybody else who is affected on some level by that primary onesh deserves whatever degree of effect they receive as well. That's like what is said in the Shem Reb Chaim in the Rabbi Meller biography, quotes this, but this appears Rabbi Karp in his Perush Al Torah by Avinu Bamikra has this in Parshas Mishpatim on the pasuk Vayu Nishechem Almanos, Barakti Yitzchem Bachar, Vayu Nishechem Almanos, Vnei Chem Yisamim, that if a person is Ma'ana, Anumana, then he's going to be punished by his wife and children, Rahman al-Islam, becoming Almanos and Yisomim. So Reb Chaim is reported as having said that when he was sick, people should let others know that they should daven for him. His relatives should daven for him. Because the matzav of someone who's sick is mashpia on people beyond him as well. And the circle of people that he affects, that he's connected to. So that's pshat Rabbi Karp has there on Vayuna Shechem Amanos V'neichem Yisamim, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't punish the wife and the kids if the wife and the kids don't deserve it as well. So it's not just meaning the kasha that this is addressing in drashas, because all the drashas here that address it. That if it's a ratiyas, so obviously, so the pshuta shemikra, Rabbi Karp says, the pshuta shemikra is what's the riboy? That v'ratiyas chem, that's what you deserve, and vayu nishchem is what they deserve on their own. So that's what Reb Chaim said, that if a person's a chola, so everyone has to daven for them because it affects the other people too, and they're parties to the outcome over there. So Chaim Shmulevitz makes the same point over here. He says when it comes to a tefillah be'eis sarah, there are two layers of that chiyuv tefillah. So layer number one is the more obvious one. Brachas daf yud beis. The Gemara has a meimor kol she'efshar lo levakish rachem l'chaver v'eino mevakesh nikra chotei. That if you're in a position to daven for others, you don't do so. So that's not right. So if someone's bitzara, so you have to daven for someone else's bitzara. But more than that, you have to be mitzdar for others, because if you're legitimately mitzdar for others, so then whatever happens to the others is really affecting you. If you show that this is that you're pained by someone else's suffering. So it's not just the suffering, it's not just affecting them, it's affecting you. And if you don't deserve to be affected that way, so then it's not right that the other person should suffer. So by your davening, even out of, on some level, the selfishness that you don't want to be in that position of tsar, so then that has a toelus potentially in saving someone else from the situation that he's in. Because if I daven for a chola, even if the chola deserves to be a chola, but I don't deserve that I should be affected by him being a chola. So then there's a toelus on that level in my tefillah as well. Chaim Shulevitz also noted in that series, there's a Medrash Rabban Parshas Matos by Melechemes Midyan, Elif lamata, says the Medrash, Parsha Kaf Beis. Yesh omrim shnei alafim mikol shevet v'shevet. There were, what's Elif lamata, Elif lamata, what's the double lashon? Each shevet had 2,000. Yesh omrim 3,000. Of those, Yud Beis Aleph Mishavim is Kleim Aleim Nemar Pasuk. Yud Beis Aleph Litzfila. So among those that were on the back end of the battlefield, there were 12,000, 1,000 for each Shevet who were just watching over the bags. And there were 1,000, 12,000 for each Shevet who were davening. Uminayin Shekein, Shenemar Aleph Lamata, Aleph Lamata. Hare kafdalid alafim. So in the battle, there were the soldiers on the front lines, and there were the people on the back lines davening as well. So Chaim Shalevitz says, apparently you see it was a one-to-one correspondence, that for every soldier in battle, there was a soldier who was davening as part of the war effort. So
they
not
on the line?
That's what the Medrash seems to be saying, that they were in the... They were bring up the rear. They weren't on the front lines. They were in the back. But they were on the battlefield, or they were supporting the battlefield. So it's not just in the abstract that people are davening, but the Ramamish that correspondence. He also discusses there. Rabbi Tursi spoke about this in Yeshiva last week. The challenge of not becoming dulled by the continuance of war, that people tend to get acclimated to whatever situation they're in, and that could have an effect on lowering the inspiration and the feeling of tefillah. And the tchusha that a person has of what's going on. He says, number one, that's always difficult to feel if you're away from the battlefield. He's right, you're in Yerushalayim and the fronts are in the north and the south. So it's difficult to feel the chlal at that level. And as the war goes on, he writes, that's a challenge as well. He says that's a natural challenge. He points out the Rashbam in Parshas Bashalach. Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed that the man is going to fall every day except for Shabbos, and you'll have Pishnayim Erev Shabbos. The Rashbam writes, Tev Zayin Kaf Beis, Vayagidu L'Moshe, Masha Matsu Mishneh, V'im Yosir Menu Aboker. Moshe Lo Yigid Lahem Ad Ata, So the Rashbam comments, Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed at the beginning of the week, the first day of the month fell, that month's not going to fall on Shabbos, we've got Pishnayim on Friday. Moshe Rabbeinu only tells everyone about this the end of the week. Why? So Chaim Shalevitz suggests, because if Moshe Rabbeinu would have told them at the beginning of the week, so then the effect wouldn't have been as strong. There's more of an effect, b'shas ma'isa, when you hear something for the first time, when you become used to it, it's already not as resonant. He says that was Pshad and Chushim ben Dan. Why was it that Chushim ben Dan was the one who took the initiative to kill Esav? Why was he the one who defended the covenant of Yaakov Avinu that was mutal, not being buried while everyone was tumulting? What about all the other brothers, all his uncles, father uncles? So he said the problem was that the Shvatim were already negotiating with Esav and kind of coming to terms with the reality that things would just have to wait. Because something grows on you, so then you become accustomed to that reality. Chushim had no idea what was going on, so when he picks up on what's going on with a fresh look, without any other connection, so then he takes the initiative. But the Shvatim, they're already in the middle of it, so the busher, the bizayin to Yaakov Avinu for Rabbi Muto with Akvura already had somewhat lessened. So in this piece, he doesn't have a knockout eitzah how to get over this. He just points out there's a problem that that we have to be conscious of to not lose the sensitivity and feeling of tsar over time, even if we become used to the reality. But he says, you see from that Medrash Rabbah by Elif Lamateh, that it wasn't enough for the one-to-one correspondence for the Mispalim to be back home. They had to be on the front, because Eino Domeh, when you're on the front experiencing what's going on, to when you're back home, even if you know what's going on. He writes over there, that's why he says, no one can say that I'll go back to Chutz La'aretz and continue to daven for Eben Eretz Yisrael. That's not going to work, he says. If you go back to Chutz La'aretz and you're so far removed, you're not going to have the right hargasha. Because even if you're here in Yerushalayim, you don't have that hargasha the way you would on the battlefield. He says, even Moshe Rabbeinu was only able to be Moshiach Klal Yisrael because he went to be Meshatef with their tsar. Medrash says that he actually went and was lifting burdens together with Bnei Yisrael, not just observing, but helping. Because in order to be in that position and have that empathy, you have to be there on the ground. And he says that you shouldn't think that I've already davened enough. There's nothing more to daven. Whatever, if the davening should have an effect, it had an effect. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, Veschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu davened all the tefillos that he davened, the tough kuf tesvav tefillos that Moshe Rabbeinu davened. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu hadn't told him to stop davening, he would have davened more. And had he davened more, it could have been the tefillos would have been answered. So there's no limit to the tefillah that is appropriate to engage in. It's not that I already daven, so there's nothing more to daven for. It's not going to have any effect. Every tefillah has a cumulative effect, and every tefillah is significant. So those are some of the themes that Chaim Mishnah Levitz discussed, at least in his notes, in his own Sichos and this Orvus, from those weeks of the Yom Kippur War 50 years ago. And very much, it's still resonant in the situation we find ourselves in now. We should all experience a Yeshua Bekarov.